Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. On behalf of our president, Dr. Dory Gold, and our director general, Chaya Herskowitz, who join us in the first row, it gives me great pleasure to bring you, to see you again here at the Institute for Contemporary Affairs for an analysis, an economic analysis of the situation in Israel today, which is a little bit different than some of the traditional briefings we've done on terrorism and strategic and security issues. I'm going to introduce a dear friend and colleague of the Jerusalem Center for Public Affairs, Dr. Yakir Plesner, who himself was the deputy governor of the Bank of Israel between 1982 and 1985, and today is a key person on our steering committee and a fellow of the Institute. Dr. Plesner, would you come and introduce our deputy, the deputy governor of the Bank of Israel, Professor Eckstein?
Thank you. Good morning. If I wanted to do justice to Professor Eckstein, I would have taken up his entire time describing his achievements. I won't do that, of course. Professor Eckstein got his doctorate from the University of Minnesota, and he has a very long list of places where he taught and did research and so on. He also did a very interesting study on the effect of terrorism on the Israeli economy, which makes it especially appropriate for him to speak on the subject. Something that some of you might be interested in, Professor Eckstein has started more recently to do work on economic history. And one of the things that he did a very engaging study on is why Jews cannot be found in agriculture in this area in the Middle Ages. And by using economics, he essentially refuted the received wisdom about it, or received wisdom which was concocted by historians who don't know economics. Professor Eckstein is now one of the very few people who ever served as deputy governors of the Bank of Israel, and I invite him to speak.
Thank you very much, and good morning. And thank you very much, Yakir, for your presentation and mentioning some of the research I have done. And since July, I am deputy governor at the Bank of Israel. And what I would like, I would like to talk about the macroeconomic picture. And with, I want to start with, give you a bit of history. There is an economic view of looking at the history of Zionism. In fact, in 1922 is when we start having data on the Israeli economy, and starting in the Hebrew University. And what you see here is the Israeli GDP per capita growing from in the same level of 2,000 Israeli shekels, growing from the something below, in terms of 2,000 shekels, something below 3,000 shekel per capita when they came here in 1922. To be something around 80. And I think without looking at this picture, just looking around, that's the success of Zionism, is within threat of, I would say, terror or wars or active military actions against the growing state here over time. We succeed. What we succeed more is to see it, we suspect, of comparison to the U.S. economy. What the blue line shows you is the ratio measured on the left-hand side of the income per capita of a Jew who make a decision to come to Israel and get the average income per capita versus making a decision to come to the U.S. And certainly in 1922, there were very few who did it. I won't go too much into the history because we want to get to what's going on today, But you have to know that it's in 1922-21 is when the immigration laws in the U.S. have changed. What we see, the big blip here, is more due to the reduction in GDP per capita in the U.S. than the increase in Israel, because this is the Great Depression. When my grandfather decided to sneak the Russian border into Poland, he didn't know that the rules in the U.S. have changed, and therefore he found himself in 1931 coming to the State of Israel, getting a certificate. He still wanted to visit his brother, but when he got to the U.S. in 1932, in the Great Depression, he said to me, "I decided that to die, it's better in the land of Israel," and he came here, and he was one of the many who came, and later on, unable to make the economy growing in a substantial, one of the highest growths per capita in the world, Israel and Japan, from the state established in 1948 until 1974. In 1974, we reached 60% of the GDP per capita in Israel. But in 1973, we had the biggest hit of the Israeli economy. And what you can see that almost every time that we hit by outside, there was some blip down in the Israeli GDP per capita relatively to the U.S. Actually, what we see is that the 73 war caused a big change in the macroeconomic picture of Israel, where the budget of defense grew up to 25% of GDP, where the total government expenditures grew up to 65% or 70% of GDP. And it was a long time that the Israeli economy had to actually struggle with this burden. I won't go on each date, but almost every drop that we see had some action correlated with defense problem that the Israelis suffer, and most of it came, in fact, in this drop after 2000, which is this year, this drop, which is 2001-2002, when we get the very large terror coming from the West Bank in particular into the centers of Israel, Tel Aviv, Haifa, and Jerusalem. Running an economy is that the terror in Israel has become part of everyday life. The fear was substantial. It affected the local investment decision and the foreign investment decisions, and it affected dramatically the prospect of the economy. Under that threat, we had a very large effect, which had high level of defense consumption. What we see is that GDP were growing down and defense expenditures went up substantially to deal with the new threat on the economic life of everyday life, which affect every person in Jerusalem, Haifa, and Tel Aviv. This threat was substantial, and the Israeli took it with military action and fence to protect the population, to protect the center of the economic activities. Those were essential for the change that we occurred in 2003. In fact, at that time, I wrote together with Professor Sidon, who is now an executive of the Bank Leumi, a paper in 2003 about the impact of terror on the Israeli economy, published in the Journal of Monetary Economics. With high rate of terror, output consumption declined significantly. In time of terror and fear, there was a huge decrease in GDP and in consumption activity. And in fact, what we see when we did our econometric study, that if there was no terror, the economy could continue grow and be, in fact, almost in 2003 where we are now, per capita output. And in fact, 75% of the reduction that we have from 2001 till 2003 was due to the terror that actually went through the economy at that time. I want to emphasize that the fact that the Israeli army and political activities succeed to reduce terror in the urban center was an essential aspect together with the change in policies of stabilizing the macroeconomy, in moving the economy into a new path and a new life. And you can see in this increasing picture, this is the total GDP, not GDP per capita, the total GDP growth. You see that on average, the economy was growing at around 5% during the large wave of immigration and what happened through the 90s with sort of the peace process going up and down. 2000 is the year of high-tech, and high-tech is extremely important in the state of Israel. However, the terror years were substantial reduction in total GDP growth, and if you measure the population growth, which was at that year around 2%, this was substantial. 2003, the government has taken several actions to stabilize the macroeconomy, and since then, that together with the monetary stability, the economy is reaching a growth rate of 5%, and what we have is basically a very stable budget framework today. First of all, public expenditures went down, and I mentioned to you 65 and 70% of GDP. It went down to 47 and 46%. And you can see that in a international comparison. The red is Israel, and you can see it was in 95, 55, 53, 54. It went up during the Intifada years. We had to decrease those expenditures in 2003, but balancing the budget at that time enabled the total expenditures to go down to 47%, which are now below the EU average, which is about the Netherlands level, which is about the UK level, which the UK economy is very similar to us. It's higher than Ireland and the United States, and maybe we can be something in between UK and those countries. But if we take out the excess burden of defense expenditures, which is about actively after we take the help from the US, about 4% of GDP, we are very close to an actual expenditures similar to other countries. So that will give us what we called the fat is not that fat anymore. And that's an extremely important aspect. And the response of the economy with stability to the war in the north, which we call it as an economic stress test, was one aspect related to this. So we basically come to a point that we are very close to what I will call total expenditures of the government, very close to where we should be, and we should be careful that as long as we don't have extreme stress for military and terror, not to increase it further, because we are still subject to potential threat. So it's very important as this year to keep the expenditures low, so that we can decrease the public sector debt. The public sector debt, when Yakir was in the government, helping it to stabilize inflation, was around 160% of GDP. And the economy, like every company, has a huge debt relative to production. That's what it means. Public debt relative to GDP is the debt relative to your output. When it's so high, the potential stability of the country is very low, and therefore the investment of individuals in the country is very low, and therefore growth is low. Decreasing this ratio to the level of around 60% is the key goal for sustained growth in Israel. In the Intifada, this ratio went up back to around 110% and was again a threat on the economy. Since then, since 2003, we enabled by budgetary and privatization to decrease the debt to be around 88% of GDP. If the prediction for 2007 of 5% growth will continue, and given the expenditures approved to 2007, we will be, with privatization, we will be around 85% of GDP. And as long as this trend continues, we keep the stability required to have a growing economy with fiscal stability of around 4 to 5%. I want to emphasize that most of our studies show that if we bring more stability and sustain peace in the area with less threat, such that defense expenditures could go a little bit even down, but not only that, that the people would see the economy stable with the potential future terror and other threat lower, we can reach more than 5 and 6% growth, and the economy could reach its goal to be among the top countries, and rather than being on a 55 to 60% GDP per capita than the U.S., we should reach an 80% per capita relative to the U.S., which should be a goal for maintaining the Israel as a Jewish home for people who are free to move and want to reach high standard of living and high quality of living. So that's basically give you the general framework why we can actually grow and provide that within the region and the interchange between defense expenditures, terror, and stability. I want to continue in the next to talk about monetary policy, where it's our responsibility. Today we are publishing the interest rate, the short-term interest rate, which is our main monetary tool, where our goal is to reach inflation of 1 to 3%. So people ask me, why 1 to 3%? 1 to 3% is the inflation rate run by most other countries. That's implicitly or explicitly the goal of the Fed, the ECB, the Bank of England, the Australian, and all the other countries which are key partners to our trade, and we are one country within this framework. So being around the 2% inflation rate would keep the monetary and financial stability to support the fiscal stability, to support the growth of the economy. The other part of the Bank of Israel is to supervise the banking system, to keep financial stability overall, and developing the capital market in the global economic atmosphere such that we can ensure competition and efficiency, not in all aspects of life, because in the financial market help all the decision making, from the household when they make decisions on buying a house to get a mortgage, when they buy a car to take a loan, to the any person who is making a decision to invest and to save for the future, and for every entrepreneur who is making decisions on developing his own economic activities. That's essential for modern economy, is a competitive, efficient, and stable financial world, and the Bank of Israel is as other central bank is a central figure in this. What we achieved, actually inflation in the last 12 months was below the target. It's actually, we measured the inflation 12 months, we are almost minus 1%. Main impact of factors are the exchange rate. Our economy, our prices are highly sensitive to the dollar exchange rate, because still going back to the inflation period, people denominate their prices of housing. Even lawyers, an accountant, an economist measure their hourly wage by the U.S. dollar, even that the U.S. dollar is dropping relative to the shekel and relative to the euro. So what you see is that a drop in the new Israeli shekel relative to the dollar exchange rate has occurred. But almost most of it was a result of the weakness of the dollar relative to the euro. In fact, the Israeli currency depreciated relative to the euro and many other currencies. And in fact, that's enabled the economy to continue the export-led growth. Moreover, if we take out of the CPI the impact of housing and the other exchange rate, we are not as low inflation as the other picture shows. The other aspect, which is a very important aspect, is the decrease in the risk premium. It's not only Israel. You have ambassadors from emerging markets, actually globally, or among emerging market, and Israel is among the top more developed among emerging markets, the risk premium has reduced. But for Israel, is reduced moreover. One way to measure the risk premium of Israel is to measure the difference between the interest rate of a treasury issued by the U.S. relative by the Shachar, which is the treasury or the bond issued by the Israeli government. For years, it was around more than 2%. We started at 2006 that this average was about 1.8%. With the very good performance of 2006, it went down substantially, but it jumped immediately. You can see it exactly here when the war started. And when the war was ended, not that great, it went up even more. But after the war, as people realized that the government of Israel is keeping the stability that I showed you before, and in fact the bond market become more international by the reform issued by the bank, by the Ministry of Finance and the Bank of Israel of primary dealers, this rate difference to the US went down from 1.7% to 0.6%. 1 percentage point down, and all of you can measure the impact of this for investment, for mortgage taking, for everyday life of the Israeli economy. The action taken by the Bank of Israel as the war started by increasing the interest rate by 25 basis points was highly criticized. The reason we did it is because we thought that the general environment of uncertainty increased and we wanted to signal stability. I think that that has an impact. The fact that we were watching and we are not afraid to take a non-popular action, but a good economic action, enable to local citizens and foreigners to realize that we are running a responsible macroeconomic policy that enable the economy to be stable. So economic action of a country under terror has to be very responsive to the entire environment, and that's very important. But a key other pillar that's important for the stability of the economy is the huge change in export and imports. In fact, since 2000, total services and of exports and goods, export relative to import, equalize. In fact, we are expecting in 2007, we were in 2006 almost $1 billion surplus. And we are expecting in 2007 to have a surplus. We are not accumulating the foreign income of dollars and euros, etc. We are basically letting the exchange rate to respond. This is different than what East Asian emerging markets are doing, like China and Japan. In addition, we have a huge growth in current account surplus, more foreign exchange coming to these countries, more foreigners seeing this country attractive for investment than locals are investing abroad. But I have to tell you, Israel is a completely different country than we knew it in the beginning 90s. There are more assets for Israeli citizens in the out world, Israeli citizens who own companies and private, then foreigners are holding assets in Israel. The difference is around $20 billion, and this is around 20%, about 15% of GDP. This is a very stable foreign exchange market that actually makes the shekel strong because we have a very strong economy in the international market, which is going together and helping us to keep the economy to stable. Those things make our economy able to get into the stress test of the war in the north. I want to emphasize that in terms of our analysis, the war in the north was different because it did not hit substantially the center of Israel, Tel Aviv and Jerusalem. It hit a little bit Haifa, but it was only for 1 month. monetary policy is important. We are following the monetary policy that has been adopted by most modern banks, central banks in Western world, and in actually emerging market as well. Policy steps should be moderate in order to prevent panic in market. Decisions should be taken only very strong decisions, I mean changing decisions, only in a crisis times, both to signal and to stabilize. Policy has to be transparent. We are publishing, you will see this afternoon, we're publishing our background and the main reasons for our decision that we just made this morning. And in 10 days, we are presenting a protocol of all the decisions, of all the ideas and the reasons and what people said in the decision process. A year ahead, private forecasters actually think that we will be in the center of our forecast. Capital market actually expect a lower inflation. But in general, you can see that the market, the red line, actually the red line, which is measured by what the market predict will be the inflation a year ahead, is always within the 1 to 3%, even that the green line tell you that we were away. So there is a high confidence for the Bank of Israel. Now, in the last few minutes, I want to say something about, I said things which are good and the economy looks good, but we could be excellent even without the desired peace. To be excellent, we need to follow the rule of reforms. Every country needs a reform. UK needs a reform, France needs reforms, every country needs reforms all the time. We have neglected reforms. And I want to emphasize two aspects of weaknesses. First, I want to say something about the financial markets. Unfortunately, I came to my job and I realized from talking to people in Israel in a way that money markets are not at the world high standards. We did not implement the rules of what is called Basel II, how to manage banks. We have a high centralized banking system, low level of competition, and low level of efficiency in the banking system. I want to tell you that the banking were all nationalized in 1983 and were privatized only recently. And we haven't seen yet in a country like us international banks coming in and providing all the platform that has been developed in international markets in the last 10, 15 years. And what they do, like HSBC and Citigroup, are just starting working here on a minor scale. We should develop this. We should change. The Bahar reform was a courageous reform, but it did not really hit the whole structure of the financial market. And I will say something about this in the... We have few other weaknesses. I think our highest weakness relative to the world is the labor market.
The strongest weakness, huh?
Very high poverty. We have a high and increasing poverty during the 90s. We have a very low participation, meaning that the supply of work relative to the labor force is low. What is amazing is that it's among men more than women. 25 years old to 55 years old are willing to look for work, this is participation rate, about 10% less than almost in all countries. In all countries, about 92% of men at the age 25 to 55 are looking for work. In some places, unemployment is higher, like France and Germany. In some places, like UK and England and other countries, is lower, but participation is around 90, 92%. In Israel, it's about 83%. There is no reason we should maintain policies that make people not to make a decision not to go to work. We have a very high rate of entrance of foreign workers, of low-skilled people from the poorest areas in the world, from Thailand, from the Philippines, from China, etc. We have neglected the reforms that took place in many countries in education system. Basic knowledge has not been developed well within population, especially the population where the parents are with low skills and knowledge of the language, of mathematics, of basic skills of writing. We neglected reforms there, and we need a reform. Our high tech is among the most, I would say, developed. It attracts people from all over the world. Many Israelis were extremely successful. It makes our economy growing substantially, but it affected a segment of the population. In fact, our low, what we call traditional sectors, construction, agriculture, food production, and others, actually productivity per worker there are much, much lower than we observe in the developed world, and we neglected R&D implementation of new technologies there. We haven't developed enough the urban development in peripheral areas. Peripheral areas, in particular, the Arab sector, the Arab-Israeli sector, which need to move from a village environment to an urban sector because the standard of living there and the type of occupation and activities are urban. The traditional family structure of this, together with the low emphasis of the political Israeli system, has neglected this and become a real problem and a bottleneck for the development of the economy. We should emphasize on the better management, and you have seen this in the recent strikes, where there were problems where localities were not managed well and they did not pay salaries. And with the government trying to make them to implement taxes, etc., there is a real problem. Israel has to develop it. And we need to invest more in public transportation and in roads in order to connect those areas to the urban centers such that people there who are not working can move easily and develop the economy. We need in financial market to enhance efficiency and competition. At the Bank of Israel, we think about this to follow the world. We develop, I won't go into detail, but we are now working on many aspects, things like the World Bank and other places develop. In the labor market, we basically have to follow active labor market policies as the Lisbon EU, and now in the Lisbon Accord, if the EU announced, but it's what has been done in the 90s in the UK and the US, Clinton and the Blair reform on welfare to work programs and earned income tax credit. We should reduce and organize all the movement of foreign workers to Israel. What we are doing is an outlier of developed world in the way we bring them. Some of them have to pay between $5,000 to $10,000 in order to work here. We actually bring a lot of them, so we reduce wages of comparable skilled Israelis to be on the level of the least developed countries. And we don't comply with labor laws. Those are extremely important actions that should be taken soon in order to change the environment in the labor market. We have to do infrastructure, and we basically have day and day to look at more reforms, as actually the World Bank in doing business tell us to do. And at the Bank of Israel, with the leadership of Professor Stanley, we try to move into this direction. Thank you. So I was told 25 minutes to have... questions.
The floor is open for questions. Dan, you want to ask a question?
I want to say that just before Dan asked the question, that I gave kind of an overall picture, and we can go into details, and if you want, you can ask me on details. I don't have it in the English presentation, but I I still can answer that.
Professor, there's been a long-running debate in Israel as to whether a thriving economy at its maximum requires full peace treaties with all of its neighbors, or whether, in fact, the let's call it the price per share of terrorism and instability and lack of peace treaties is already built in a certain sense in the minds of investors. Can you develop that idea just a little bit? You touched on it a little bit before, mentioning that reforms are actually more important than full blown peace accords with all of Israel's neighbors in terms of the economy.
Well, I want to emphasize two things. First of all, every country, including the U.S., which is the most spectacular growing Western economy, which is hit by threat of terror or other threat, it increases uncertainty. Increase uncertainty, decrease stability, decrease investment, and has negative impact. Everything else equal. In addition, to fight the threat, you have to take resources from other sources into defense. The U.S. did it. Every country does it. Those resources to defense are usually, on most of them, are not gross impact. So therefore, being in under potential hit by terror or by other sources certainly has a negative impact. In this situation, it's even more important to have the correct reforms. It's more important to keep macroeconomic stability, because the likelihood of that of the threat happening is a little higher. And I think what we found out is that we were extremely lucky in July, where the economy was in a huge budget surplus and growing on a 6% level. Therefore, the war was very limited impact. On top of this, people working in the north and industry in the north understood the importance of exports, and therefore they continue working day and night to fulfill their orders from abroad. So what I want to emphasize is that there is no conflict between the two. It's two things which are important. Peace is good to enhance stability, and enhancing stability can make growth far more. We can grow maybe 6, 7, 8%. I certainly believe that with the current economic, with the current political, geopolitical, which is not peace, with reforms in the labor market, with bringing back people who are not working in working, we can have another almost 1% growth per year. Or 0.5%, depends how active we will be there. Investing in future education is extremely important. there is another cost of the unsolved peace treaty with neighbors, is the neglect of leadership from economics. Leadership is always the head of state. The prime minister has a visitor from the U.S. and has to deal with the peace process day and night. He doesn't have the time and the capacity sometimes to push for the reforms. It is the Clinton reform. It is the Blair reform in the labor market, in the welfare to work. It's not on the name of some economist. It's not in our welfare to work. It's on the name of a Wisconsin. The reason is because it was not on the name of a prime minister who pushed it. And that's, I think, another cost of the geopolitical instability in not that there is those are trade-offs, but it's very important. And I think it's extremely important to have a strong finance minister who is pushing reforms forward and moving the economy forward independently of the additional gain that we can get from peace.
Jean-Michel Rickner, Interpress. The Israeli economy is told to be controlled more or less by 15 to 18 families or group of large. Anyway, the banks are, there are four or five banks in Israel. You say you introduced HSBC and some Citibank, which is trying to develop the Israeli market. But how do you see the opening really of the Israeli economy if so limited or so such large groups control the economy and the banks, the foreign banks, have no easy penetration on the Israeli market?
Well, first of all, I want to emphasize that there is a lot of populist discussion about this. Unfortunately, I haven't seen recently a good study about this issue of concentration of capital within few families or few individuals. But I am in this country since 83, an economist, and I remember the country in 83. There were very few people at that time, very few families important to the Israeli economy. Most of the economic activities were at the hand of the government. So I would say that the capital is larger now and more people are involved. Furthermore, I think the economy is open. This is a real open economy. We see Warren Buffett investing. We see Cerberus, which is a very important financial institution in the U.S., trying to buy a bank. There are some legal and regulatory issues in terms of whether that will be approved or not, but there is a huge interest. The amount of foreign direct investment in Israel has been substantial. Most of the high-tech are new people. So I don't think that the picture that some populists write it down is correct about the trend. I think Israel economy is much more open, is much more diversified, and there are many more forces at hand, and the power of the government to involve in direct business has reduced substantially. So I actually think we have a very positive trend. Whether we are enough, no. I said it in particular. We should go ahead by opening more, by improving the financial sectors, by improving the regulation, by adopting international standards. We will certainly get HSBC and Citigroup maybe from just being a small bank working with top 200 companies, maybe a bank that provide services to the entire population, which they do in many less developed and developed countries. So I would see there is a way to go, and we should be there, and I'm working on this. In fact, I'm leading I can tell you that one thing I found, maybe I will share with you this information, what I found is a key issue is coordination of regulators in the capital market. So I establish a forum, what they call capital market forum, that I want to develop the financial sector. And what I put into the room, I first invited all the bankers. So that, what I mean, all the people who are in the first the private sector, not the general managers, the people who are responsible on the clearing rooms and the transaction rooms, from Bank Leumi, from Bank Poly, from Bank, all the banks. Then also from the insurance companies. And then I brought in the supervisor of the banks and the supervisors from people. I did it actually jointly with the accounting office, Yaron Zalika at the finance ministry and with his deputy. And then we brought all the regulators from the SEC, from the tax authority, and from the stock exchange general. So I put 40 people in one room and I said, how we make one financial instrument which is called repo? And we are talking. Every few weeks we talk in order to develop this. It requires a lot of activities, actually not legislation. It has been started before. So one thing I found in Israel which is missing coordination among regulators and the free discussion between us and the financial sector and other players, and then basically to develop it. By the way, that's the way it's done in England, in the US, in other places. You always have to generate coordination between regulators in order to develop these markets. And that was missing. So I think by this way of coordination between regulators, we can push this economy much farther, especially in the financial sector.
Any more questions?
How does Israel stand in terms of taxation in international competitors, both of labor of the labor market and the capital market? And is it a deterrent to further economic development or what?
Well, we have a tax rate which is lower than Sweden and Norway. And we have it higher than the U.S. and Ireland. We are very close, in fact, around the average EU, which is relatively high. Taxes have been reduced substantially. Marginal tax rate, which was in 2002 around 65%, is 48% starting this year. That's a huge reduction. Remember that total tax collection has increased substantially. Consumption tax is 17%. It's around average. So at this time, I would say that marginal taxes throughout income is maybe higher than what I would like to be optimal, but it's not extremely high. We cannot say it's extremely high. It's very much like an average. Now, remember, as I said before, we have around 4% or 5% expenditures more on defense. In fact, there is now a committee that the prime minister said that they want another 1% of GDP expenditures. This is a burden, and we therefore need higher taxes because we need to reduce our debt to GDP such that next time we get a stress test of some terror activity or some other kind of what we call the negative shock to the economy, either from economic reasons or from defense reasons, that we wouldn't need to reduce expenditures so much as we did in 2002. So what I would say in particular, at this stage, I don't think that taxes on average or marginal are the big threat for economic further development.
Eckstein, I wanted to thank you for an excellent presentation and wanted to make a brief remark that we now also have an Indian bank in Israel, State Bank of India.
Thank you.
It just started functioning for last week, since last week. Thank you.
Thank you. Now, India is one of the symbols of economic growth, which is a substantial growth in India, and there is a large... there are many Israelis who are working in India, and that's, I think it's a great that we have here an Indian bank. I hope it will be important to enable both Indians to come here and invest in the Israeli economy. I mean, I want to emphasize to you something, a surprise, you know, that Indonesia company bought 20% in an Israeli insurance company. This tells you what you discussed before. This is a different country. This is a different country. So I wouldn't be surprised to find that Indian companies will come and invest here. India software market is growing in a... It's spectacular, and it's a threat to Israeli soft market. But many Israeli companies actually develop Indian subsidiaries, and I think that's the whole point of globalization. It's not anymore a war on the pie. It's actually a joint action of making the pie larger. I can talk another 7 minutes if there are more questions.
Any more questions? Yeah, go ahead, please.
Could the strength of the shekel become a problem for the exporters? I mean, vice versa, the dollar.
Thank you very much We just, in the meeting this morning, when we made a decision on the interest rate, I think I wouldn't mention the name, I said, it's really surprising that we don't get many complaints from exporters. And I just went to a restaurant and a businessman came to me and said, you know, actually the exchange rate is okay. And we said, oh, maybe he's selling for the euro era and not to the US era. I think it is to some extent a problem. So when you have an economy which is growing mainly in export, there is a pressure, and it's, there is an accumulation of foreign exchange, there is a pressure down. I think it could be. I actually believe that we haven't seen enough consumption growth in Israel. I would. We haven't seen consumption growing as much as GDP, which is in a. I would expect it to grow up, and I would expect actually import and to grow up. I also expect Israeli citizens to diversify their portfolio more abroad. By now, they held only for long-term investment only something like 7-8% of their investment abroad. I would expect that they will increase this to 20-25%, which is equivalent in developed countries. So I would expect that these two adjustments probably will balance with the increasing flood of foreign exchange into the country. It also enables us to be on a 4% interest rate. But I wouldn't take out of question that if that will continue, that we will be able to let the interest rate to be lower. And that's very good for the economy. That's very good for consumers. It's very good for investors, as long as we can reach stability in this situation. So I see it as something which is concern. We look at it. We are careful about it. We talk about it openly. But I would actually think that it will work out. Another thing to point out is that it's a lot the dollar relative to the euro than what is going on with the shekel. And, you know, it was 120, it was 133 now. It was 120 sometimes in the past. The Israeli economy has no impact on this one. So it may move back and in many respects, we are more a euro-era country than otherwise.
But we export more to the United States?
No, not now. I think it's about become more and more equal, and remember that our export and activities with the Central European countries is increasing, and they are slowly becoming a euro-era. Even if they are not joining directly, they are basically running their currency as adapted to the euro and so forth, and thinking moreover about that. Basically, the world is developed to Asia, Euro, and large area, and the U.S. And I think that the share of exports and activities of Israel within this area may increase. I mean, just because it's shorter and open, and more opportunities are there.
Yeah, go ahead.
I tell you a point, 2 points. When the investigation into the tax authority started, two people from the ministry came to talk to us at the bank about the possible that, you know, it will reduce reputation of policy and it will have financial stability. And it turns out that actually after their talk, I went to a conference of the Financial Stability Forum of the Basel International Settlement Bank. And I met Ber, the head of the OECD person on capital markets, and I asked everybody, is this investigation will cause some financial instability? And most of them said to me, almost all of them, and in particular this lady from the OECD, we actually think that in all countries there are people who are making illegal activities. Those where we read about them, it means that people do something about it. And that's a good signal. All of them said it to me without knowledge of actually going into the details. So that's one aspect. The other aspect I want to say that, first of all, monetary policy in general, I've shown you the table and that was not on question. But we don't have a threat of changing our fiscal policy because our main opposition is Bibi Netanyahu and not Chavez. So there is no real threat to fiscal stability. There is no real threat to monetary instability. And given that, the financial markets and the business sector and the world actually view us this way. And I keep talking to all the rating. I mean, we meet regularly when they come here or when we are in conferences, people from Moody's and Fitch and Standard & Poor, and they look at the numbers. They look at the action. And they look at the prospect of changing these actions. And basically the conclusion of the discussion that if everything will continue the way it is in the budget and the next year budget will go the same direction, we may see an upgrading of the Israeli economy. And that, I think, is something which I have to say which is good for the economy in general.
Yeah, one last question.
During the election last year, I mean almost a year ago now, the economic topic was surprisingly a big issue for the voters, and it expressed dissatisfaction with the social agenda. Since then, you mentioned it, lots of things happened, Lebanon war and so on. But do you think that politics has done, or the politicians, the government has done enough to keep up? Even, I think, the International Monetary Fund was criticizing neglecting the social agenda a little bit too much. Do you think enough has been done on this?
Oh, almost nothing has been done. I would say a lot of talking, but nothing has been done. And at the Bank of Israel, jointly with Professor Manuel Trachtenberg, who is now the new economic consultant and the head of the social and economic, committee or council at the ministry, at the Prime Minister office, with the finance ministry, we are working on what I call four-year plan, that we look at the comprehensive way of looking, not just, you know, minimum wage or the. I had a list of issues that should go down there. I call it in one word, active labor market policy. It's earned income tax credit. It's foreign workers. It's subsidies for daycares. It's transportation. It's activities of enhancing ability of people who are unemployed. It's a whole range of action, and it's nothing new. You just go to the EU Lisbon Accord and other reforms. You just copy what has been done to countries who were actually in a situation better than we are now. And we should move in implementing, changing, preferences of budget and going there. And as people, we form it to the government. I hope the government will adopt it. And no matter what government will adopt it. As you said, it is on the agenda. And I think we, as people who are professional, try to provide the best program. I think it is on the agenda, and it will be on the Israeli political agenda unless budget, which is now adopted to this around 0.25% of GDP, which is tiny, to something around 1%, but not only the budget. What I mean is a whole set of action that should come in. My personal contribution to this is, without saying it also and being involved, is actually to organize a new thinking about all the issue of foreign workers on all the dimensions.
Why is that so much of a problem to you? I mean,
this is a huge problem. From
industrial country has
no industrial country has policies like Israel. No industrial country has construction workers paying in China $10,000 to go and work. No country. Not only non-industrial countries. Less countries don't let it go. That push wages of low-skilled individual very low. Construction is an important occupation for low-skilled individuals. And I just want to say the following. Agriculture. many countries bring some seasonal workers and so forth. No one has a state where 30,000 people from Thailand working with for 10,000 Israelis. No country has this ratio. That has an impact. And moreover, we are having a population of close to 200,000 people which are part of this country, which are living in a completely different world, and we push them into living in their own home country standard of living. And we have an island of poverty on top of all the others. So this is, I think, an, I want to say the last thing about this, which is very important and important for me. Israel is a country of the Jewish people. It's a Zionist country. It brings here all the Jews who want to come here. Most of the Jews who come here are the low-skilled Jews. Bringing 2,000 other low-skilled people to compete with them on the labor market is a big threat for the growth and the evolution of this country, on top of the 20% Arab population, which is part of our country, and we have to develop it in particular. And those are the key important issue, is to make the Arab-Israeli population part of this country in the long-run peace, and in particular to enhance the skills of the low skills, both the Arabs and the Jews who came here, are bringing in 2,000, which is huge, population from other countries with low skills, is just irresponsible.
Yeah, I just want to add something I found out. Professor Eckstein said that foreign workers pay abroad between $6,000 and $10,000 to come here, which is a huge investment for them. Some of them now are unemployed in Israel, and they don't want to leave Israel, although they are unemployed here, because they are hoping to recover that investment. Okay, thank you very much. Thank you, Professor Eckstein.